Coming up on Locked On Celtics, Chuck McKenney of RedsArmy.com joins me with more thoughts on the Mavericks' win, appreciating this team for who they are. And for the love of God, can we stop pushing for a trade for a center? It's a new Locked On Celtics. Millie's, let's go.
So hype right now. Anything's possible. Oh, my mama. Oh, my baby, man. Anything's possible.
Rain the Jays back with the vengeance. Back. All the real Celtics fans in attendance. Ooh. This is the truth like 34. Yeah. It's like walking in the garden when you hear the roars. The crowd goes crazy. Most in-depth coverage on the daily. Mainly podcast royalty, the content kings. When you talking about the franchise with 17 rings. Focus like Danny at the deadline. Global with it, got a local feel like the red line, the blue line, the green line. Play it in between time. I'ma throw my C's jersey on in the meantime and press play. When the F's done, I can't wait until the next day. Trying to stay in tune with the C's, it's the best way. Melly.
Welcome back. This is the Locked On Celtics podcast. I want to thank you for making us part of your daily routine. Here for you Monday through Friday with a free daily podcast. I'm here. I'm John Corrales of MassLive.com here with Chuck McKenney of RedsArmy.com. Chuck, how you been, man?
Man, everything is just so beautiful. I just see the roses. I see unicorns. I see rainbows, man. It's just wonderful.
I'm sure. It's all just great. Beautiful. The Celtics, Chuck, are the best team in basketball right now. And as we record this, we're recording it on Tuesday night. The Philadelphia 76ers are losing by 5 to the Cleveland Cavaliers with 5 minutes to go. So kind of waiting on how that's going to turn out. The Celtics, separation, Chuck. Separation in the standings.
You know, I did make a point to share that on Twitter, that score at the moment, because there are plenty of Boston media personalities who like to fault the Celtics for their struggles against Cleveland and the Knicks this year. And, you know, they fail to accept the fact that, you know, the season is a grind and sometimes good teams play down to bad teams. And in the end, it's not about the style points, although net rating does matter in the NBA. But, you know, it's just, you know, you never know. And any given night, right? You can have a battle with a bad team. And Philly's in a slugfest right now. But, I don't get too concerned with the teams in the middle of the pack in the Eastern Conference like the Sixers. I prefer to focus on the teams at the top, like our Boston Celtics.
Oh, nice one. Nice one. The Celtics are indeed 8-1. They play the Washington Wizards, a bad team. They are 2-6, and Isaiah Thomas is in town. Saw Isaiah Thomas tonight at the Marcus Smart event. The funniest part about Isaiah Thomas at the Marcus Smart event was him asking Marcus Smart to please don't guard me tomorrow. I just came back. Let me live. which was pretty nice. A nice event. Basically, everybody was there except for Enes Kanter, who was in Washington lobbying and trying to, you know, fight his political fight, and Gordon Hayward, who just got home recovering from surgery. So, like, the entire team was there. It was a nice event. Like I said, Isaiah Thomas was there. The coaching staff showed up. Like, it was everybody. And nobody really had to. Just another sign that this team is together and they seem to enjoy each other's company, and it's all showing up on the court where they continue to find ways to grind out these wins. And I will talk about this in the second segment about comparing this team to last year. It's hard not to when they win a game like they did against the Dallas Mavericks, because that was one of those games where you felt like it was going to be a loss. And if you still have that PTSD, Chuck, you're like, oh, here we go. And all of a sudden they pull it out.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, it's just, Kemba is just a great player, and his ability. And I wrote about this, briefly today. It was just like his ability to be complimentary and then take over games in an instant. is just remarkable. And maybe it's because we didn't really see that a lot from Kyrie last year. He kind of struggled with that. But to see Kemba do that, to go from being passive and then seamlessly taking over games, it's just a remarkable quality. And it's just also part of his leadership. And it's just, you know, it just feeds into the general feeling of this team. Just playing together and it's, you know, I did have confidence that they were going to, you know, pull through even with Tatum really struggling last night. I mean, they still have, you know, with Kemba, and then Jaylen Brown is so damn good, right? I mean, they still have so many offensive options, that I just have confidence and, you know, there's just the way they're playing. You know, with all that talent, just makes me feel confident. If I'm feeling confident, I'm sure as hell they're feeling confident.
Right.
Right. So I wasn't, you know, it's just, I think we all can feel it and they're feeding off of that. And it's, you know, it's showing. I mean, we're, you know, barely 10 games in, but I think everyone recognizes it.
Yeah. I think I've said this before and you just, it bears repeating, I think, because it's significant that these guys have that trust. I think this is all, it all comes down to the trust in one another to make the right play. That you know that the person who has the ball is only looking to try to make the right play. And if you have the ball and you're trying to do the same and the other four guys in the floor are all trying to do the same thing, then you're not giving up a shot by passing out of something that's contested or lightly contested, even if it's something that you could maybe rise up in and get a halfway decent look off if it was like a end of shot clock situation, let's say. But by passing out of a situation like that, when you have the ball and there's 18 seconds left in the shot clock, you just trust that you give it up and that person's going to be making the right play. You are going to then make a decision. Are you going to cut? Are you going to screen? And if everybody's trying to do the right thing, then more often than not, you're going to get the ball back with an opportunity to score at some point. Might maybe not be that possession, but it might be later possessions. And that's, I think that's what allows Kemba Walker to do what he does, that he can say, all right, look, I'm going to pass it up in this spot. And last night or in that Dallas game, it was another good example where he had just hit three straight threes and there was a pick and roll and he got blitzed. And instead of just trying to dribble to a spot where he can take another three because he's hot, he gave it up to Marcus Smart, and Marcus Smart drove and got an and one. And that's the right play. And it resulted in 3 points because he trusted his teammates. That is the, I think, number one thing that has stood out to me over the course of this season.
Yeah, you know, that you just cited a great example, right? Because had Walker just kind of maybe taken a, you know, a couple dribbles backwards and put up a 30 footer, which is a shot we seem to see with much more frequency these days, some type of step back, you know, we all would have felt like, oh, he deserves that heat check. But you're absolutely right. Smart was wide open and you know, Smart, you know, finished the play. So that's a great example. And, you know, Brad's always has been talking about trust for years. So, and, you know, and I would say, you know, Smart has had a couple of big baskets at the end last night, but he might be the only guy in the offense who may take, a questionable shot. I mean, he's been a fantastic playmaker this year. His defense has been ridiculously good. You know, he earns every kind of quote unquote bad shot that he takes. But I think for the most part, the offense, it just looks really good. And then even, you know, when you start to isolate it and you look at the guys that sometimes Brad's going to when Wanamaker's getting minutes and Javonte Green is getting minutes and Grant Williams here and there, and they're still not getting much from Cantor. You're like, you know, I know we're top heavy, but last night without, you know, obviously without Hayward and Tatum with historic, you know, shooting woes last night, they still put up, you know, how many points did they have? 116
points. Yeah.
And it's like, from who? Like, I was, you know, how well, who are these other guys who are scoring? So it's all working.
Yeah. I mean, you're getting these little contributions, even Javonte Green comes in and gives you 9 points on 50% shooting. It is all working. And I've said it. A few people have said it. I think there's only one player on this team that's playing below expectations coming into this season, and that's Semi Ojeleye. Like, and it's not that we expected much from Semi Ojeleye, but he's the only one right now that's had significant struggles that on the floor. Everyone else, even Tatum, after shooting 1-for-18, I'm impressed with all of them. I'm just looking straight down the box score in order of points score. Kemba is Kemba. Jaylen Brown, huge step forward. Marcus Smart is Marcus Smart. And I would say Marcus Smart is even playing better than he has because his defense has been amazing.
No doubt.
Daniel Tice, surprisingly good as a starting center. Brad Wanamaker, solid. He's not hurting you. Javonte Green, surprising. Robert Williams, I think, is about what we expected.
Yep.
Tatum, obviously, I think, is taking steps forward and taking shots where he's supposed to take the shots. Who else? Grant Williams. He's pretty decent for a rookie.
Yep. Yeah.
Enes Kanter, we haven't seen anything, but I mean, basically you can expect him to be Enes Kanter. Carson Edwards is a second round pick. You get what you get from him. And hopefully his shooting can straighten out. Everybody I just named, I can't give a legitimate negative based on their preseason expectations. And so that's the sign of a team that's playing extraordinarily well. And yeah, not surprisingly, that team with the level of talent they have, especially at the top, 8-1. Yeah, that kind of almost makes sense.
How come we didn't see this coming?
Well, yeah. But, you know, how many times have we said, Chuck, that the best case scenario never pans out? It never pans out. And yeah. It's still only 9 games into the season, so it's still super, super early to say this is exactly how it's going to go. I mean, they're not going to win 8 of 9 all the time. If they win tomorrow, you know, 90% of the games, that's not going to be how the season goes. But I can say with certainty, and I'm going to guess you agree, that the level of effort that we're getting out of these guys, that we see out of these guys, is something that we can expect for the entire season. I'm sure they're going to have some duds. I'm sure they're going to go out there and have like, oh man, they just didn't have it, and they're going to lose by 30, probably 2-3 times this season. It's going to happen. But I would expect them to battle as best they can, even in games where they lose. And I don't see anything more you can ask out of these guys.
Yeah, absolutely. If anything, there's room for growth. I think, you know, like we talked about with getting a little bit more from Kanter, this stretch without Hayward will be interesting. You know, they have about 18 games now. The schedule is fairly balanced. There's a decent amount of good teams on it. You know, can they go like 13-6? Will they be that good? Can they be even better than that? I think, you know, that'll be interesting to see. I think with this type of injury, I'm not concerned one bit that Hayward's going to come back and not be the player he was. I mean, maybe I'm just glossing over it, but a hand injury that's, you know, 4 weeks, 5 weeks or so. I think he's going to come back in and he'll fit seamlessly for the most part. So, you know, it's all about how, you know, it'll be interesting to see how much, you know, they can win, who's going to step up on what night over the next, you know, 6 weeks. But I'm still expecting them to be, I mean, maybe they'll fall back a bit, but you know, I mean, Milwaukee lost Middleton, right? So, how much can they, you know, Toronto's been hit with injuries. So these injuries are hitting all these other teams. It's possible come Christmas, we're still number one in the East. And is that crazy?
I don't think that's crazy. And that kind of brings me into the next topic, and we'll take that one after the break. Why we should stop comparing this team to last year and just appreciate them for who they are. It's next on the Locked On Celtics podcast.
You are Locked On Celtics, your daily Boston Celtics podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Everything the Boston Celtics do this year feels like it's going to get compared to last year. It's not difficult to do. It's very easy, and it's natural, especially after the way things went last year, and especially how Kemba Walker is the complete opposite of Kyrie Irving, and how these guys are winning games that they would have lost last year, and how they're finishing games and finishing plays and all that stuff. But as I wrote today or yesterday on MassLive.com, go to MassLive.com/Celtics for my column, all of my work and Tom Westerholm's work. I think it's time to just stop comparing this team to last year, because I think they've earned it. And I mean it in a sense that this team has shown itself to be good enough to that I almost think the comparisons to last year are just unfair. I understand it, but I think they deserve now to just be appreciated for the work that they're doing and for who they are, not who they're not, Chuck.
Yeah, I mean, any comparisons are, but it's positive. It's more of us boasting that
absolutely
this team is playing so well, right? So I don't feel like the comparisons in any way can be distractions to the team. But you're right. It does kind of cloud who they are and what they're achieving. But aside from, you know, the games where they play Kyrie or when they're playing Philly and Horford, I think we'll start to move past that. I do feel like there's still plenty of vitriol for Irving, especially when we play Brooklyn. You know, and Philly's a rival, so we'll want to be able to best Horford and such. But you know, you make a good point. But for me, it's just like I don't necessarily see the harm in it, because I don't find it to be a distraction to the guys. And, you know, it's it's one thing if they were playing like last year's team and we were comparing them, saying, well, they're just as dysfunctional, or they're just as,
right.
as segmented, or they're just as selfish. Then I'd be like, oh, you know, then I would get it. But I understand your point, right? I mean, individual contributors, there's enough to focus on with the leap certain players are taking, you know, Jalen and the way Kemba's playing and all the other guys we talked about that, you know, we can rave about them without comparing them to what happened last year. So I'm with you. I agree.
Yeah. I mean, that's all it is. It's impossible. It's impossible to, not compare. Like, you always compare in sports this year to last year. I mean, that I'm not saying it's not going to happen, and I'm not saying like you should stop at all costs, but the way I compared it was kind of like being in a new relationship. And you know, if you're in a new relationship, you don't want the person that you're dating constantly telling you, man, this is so great, you're not like this other person. And like, okay, I mean, I appreciate that you are saying this in such a positive manner, but also, do you like me because I'm not that other person, or do you like me for me? Like, and it, obviously it's not apples to apples exactly.
Yeah, but, no, I get you though. Yeah.
But you know, like there is, and it's sports. It's fun. Like, yeah, I'm sure part of it is you love these guys because they're not Kyrie and all of that stuff. But, you know, I think the fairness, like these guys are working their asses off. They've all moved on. The guys who are back from last year, they've all moved on. And, I think it would just be cool. It'd just be cool. And still hate Kyrie. Go ahead. Hate Kyrie. That's yeah, fine. I get it. I'm not going to tell anybody not to boo Kyrie. Boo your hearts out. I'd be a little less like if you're booing Al Horford. I know people are going to do that too, but like that's a little different. But point being, and like you said, I know you agree.
No, but I'd like to add, you know, let's start comparing them to the other teams who are at the top of the league, right? I mean, the Lakers are playing well. Let's just, you know, why compare them to the Celtics of last year? Let's look at how they stack up. Because they've earned that right,
yeah,
to be compared to the better teams in the league this year. The Lakers, the Bucks, you know, teams we're beating, and the other teams out west. I mean, that's where we should be, you know, focusing the comparisons on.
Absolutely,
because they deserve that.
Absolutely, like that, and that's the whole thing. That at some point here, they've worked to a point where they deserve the opportunity to be seen as this year's team and this year's contenders or whatever. Meanwhile, as I'm speaking, Philadelphia just beat Cleveland. So, but by one, that was a tough one for Cleveland to lose on the road. They almost had that. But anyway, back to my point. They have earned this. They have earned this right to be considered among the better teams. You look at the power rankings, and depending on who's doing it, they're in the top five somewhere. And you look ahead. Washington, they play Washington next. They play Golden State, who's just decimated by injuries. They just lost another guy. Sacramento, after that, they just lost De'Aaron Fox. The next fully healthy team they face is the Phoenix Suns in a week. So that's things are lining up pretty well. If they over the course of the next 2 weeks – come out of that road trip, let's say, if we include the Washington game, 1, 2, 3. I mean, is 3-3 acceptable on that road trip, or 4-2? Like, can you chalk up a loss to the Clippers? You chalk up a loss to Denver, or do you sit there and say, hey, if we're going to give these guys the respect, maybe we shouldn't be chalking up losses. We just say, all right, look, Clippers are a test. They got Paul George back. The Nuggets are going to be a test, and we're gonna see how they – like, that's going to be an interesting game. Like, the Nuggets game is going to be really, really interesting. In the altitude, on the road, obviously against one of the best teams in the West, with Jokic being as skilled as he is, that's going to put the Celtics defense to the test. Chuck, they've been defending so damn well. Like, that's maybe the biggest thing out of all of this. They've really been defending well for long stretches of these games. They're in passing lanes. How many times have these guys gotten into passing lanes and gotten steals and gotten on breaks? I mean, that's amazing work for a team that we thought coming in might be a middle-of-the-pack defensive team. So
yeah. I know. And, you know, we're still hearing, and I think last night it was Chris Mannix, the mainstream reporter is chiming in with, if the Celtics can only add a defensive big who can rebound or something along those lines, they'll be right in the mix. And it's just like, I want to put my head through a wall. For one, there's nobody out there that they're going to add that's going to improve them dramatically, as everyone seems to believe, right? There's just no sort of obvious trade.
No.
Right? And it's just like, I don't know. I think it's for seeing them. Yes, they have a weakness, which they're, as you just described, they're clearly overcoming. Their bigs are playing well enough, and their swarming defense is doing it. So I wish they could be seen for that, not for, and it's kind of a bit, it's a little lazy, because that was the stigma going in, and I feel like people are just carrying that over now. It's like, well, if you watched Tice and Rob Williams, they're doing enough. I mean, again, not every team is like Philadelphia. So we can't be like the Sixers. So we're gonna be short there no matter who we end up trading for. So it's just like, yes, let's just celebrate the awesome defense that they are. I mean, you know, the Warriors never had a huge presence in the middle, right? When they were winning, they had a top five defense, but their defense was swarming. I mean, Draymond Green was excellent. He could play bigs. But still, you can have a dominant defense without a dominant big.
You can. You absolutely can. How about this? Let's take a break, because we should continue to address this trade for a big man situation, since it continues to rear its head. We'll take a break. We'll come back with more on that next on the Locked On Celtics podcast.
Follow us on our social channels at LO Celtics on Twitter and at Locked On Celtics on Instagram.
This has been discussed before. It's going to be discussed again. It's just continues. And I think you hit on it before, Chuck, that this was the narrative going into the season. And so it continues. It's going to take like a while for that narrative to die down. And I think part of the reason why it's still there is the argument that the Celtics haven't really played a very tough schedule. They lost to the one team that does have the dominant center in Philly to open the night. But after that, I mean, how many of these teams have like real dominant bigs? Nobody. Toronto, they don't have a dominant big anymore. You want to say Mitchell Robinson defends the rim well for New York? Okay, yeah, but New York's such a joke. Milwaukee, both of their bigs play too far outside to be in that same vein. Tristan Thompson isn't who he was in Cleveland. Charlotte doesn't really have anybody. They got one of the Plumleys. No, they got the Zellers. They're one of the Zeller teams. San Antonio has LaMarcus Aldridge. He's not a banging big man. Dallas, all of their size plays out in the perimeter. They haven't faced a dominant big outside of Embiid. But also to that point, within that point, there's also the counterpoint. Not a lot of teams have those bigs. And you sit there and say, all right, but they're going to have to go through Philly to get to the finals. Okay, well, playoff Philly is a little bit different than regular season Philly. And frankly, if the Sixers want to go and dump the ball into Embiid and have him play post up for 40 minutes a game, fine. Go ahead.
Yeah.
Right? Like, they'll figure out a way to defend that. They'll obviously double him with Ben Simmons' guy. Mm-hmm. And then you stay home on Tobias Harris. That it's, if they want to do that, then I'm okay with that. And if Philly just beats them because of that, then so be it. Because the other counterpoint is, who do you give up to get that center? What center is out there, to your point from earlier? And who do you give up to get that center? Because if it's one of those guys like Andre Drummond, then you're going to have to give up a lot. Because Andre Drummond makes $27 million. And the only way you're going to match that salary is by giving up either Gordon Hayward or Marcus Smart plus other pieces. And then you're creating a different problem.
Yeah, that's the key, right? You're taking away from a strength. And what you're adding just I just don't see it having across the board benefits, right? It's really for competing against one team. And then that big, is he going to limit you on offense? I mean, Brad likes his centers to do certain things. I mean, bringing in a guy like Drummond or somebody who's lumber, it's just, there's just not a good obvious fit. You know, there's one guy who would be nice to bring back, but you know, I don't think Phoenix is looking to part with Baines, who's having a heck of a season. But if things go south there and come January, you know, they suddenly become sellers, is there a scenario there that might work?
I did find today, because I was proposing the same thing, that the Celtics cannot trade for Baines again. They can't bring him back within the same season. So I had that same thought, and it's
that's definite.
I was under the impression that you couldn't trade for a guy that you released or was traded and released, but as long as you traded and then traded back for him, that you could within the same year, but they can't. So unfortunately, that is kind of, unless they trade him somewhere and that team trades him to Boston for some reason, but I'm sure there might be a way to circumvent that, but That gets super complicated. And then I think if it becomes obvious that they're pulling some trickery, the NBA might step in.
Yeah. I mean, so if you cross that off, then it's just, you know, more than likely they're just going to have to live with what they have, which honestly, if you just take a quick look at rebounding, you know, per game numbers, the Celtics are middle of the pack. Right now, they're like 13, just 0.2 rebounds behind the Lakers, who have one of the more dominant centers in the league. So, and then if you just look at defensive rebounding numbers, it looks like the Celtics are fifth with 37. Now, I know it's all can be skewed to pace and per 100 possessions and all that stuff, but I mean, I don't think it's as bad. The rebounding seems to have improved since the start of the season. It's still a weakness, but I don't think it's, you know, to me, it doesn't seem like it's going to be this Achilles heel that's going to drag them down.
I feel like I agree. And I don't think rebounding numbers give like the best indicator of success, overall team success. And, but I do say that I do think the Celtics have a bit of a bad habit giving up offensive rebounds. And they may not do it for the entire game, but they have like stretches where it happens. And you're like, God, like it's 24 second clock, but the team's had the ball for 2 minutes. It seems like, they obviously, but I don't know that that's because they lack size. It's sometimes I think they just lack, when that happens, it's the bench that's on the floor more often than not. And I think they're just so out of position that they give up a bunch of rebounds. When you're constantly rotating and you got two guys flying to the same shooter and you're out of position, then that becomes prime offensive rebound real estate. And so I think that's a bigger problem than having a big. Like, if you could just magically put Andre Drummond on this team, I just don't know that changes a significant amount. Like, yeah, he grabs a bunch of rebounds. Okay. But it doesn't, you still have the same issues with guys on the bench. He's not going to play the whole game. And it becomes like, where does he go on offense? Like,
yeah.
You know what? Like,
no,
I just don't think the people who are suggesting, oh, well, you got to trade for a center. I don't think they're thinking it through. I think what they're really saying is, man, it'd be nice if the Celtics had a center that was more dominant. That's the piece that you are missing. Okay. Yeah. But going and getting one is a lot different. They don't have the money to match without creating a problem in a different spot. They don't have the type of targets out there that they can get that they can fit seamlessly that wouldn't potentially screw up this offense and get in the way of Tatum and Brown and Kemba driving and Gordon driving. And beyond that, I still think that some people are sitting there thinking like, well, you just move Gordon for those guys. And no, like Gordon's back. Gordon is back. Like, I know he's hurt now, but like, no, that's not before the season. I understood it, but now it's obvious. Even 9 games in, it's obvious that's not a smart thing to do.
Yeah, I'm with you. Until, you know, I won't give any credence to any sort of opinion like that unless it's followed with an immediate kind of target that makes sense.
Right.
And out of all the chatter, we've seen nothing remotely close to any name that makes sense. And as the Celtics continue to play well and continue to build with this core kind of, you know, four of Brown, Tatum, Kemba, Hayward, and actually Smart. I mean, I'm not touching those guys. So if you can make something else happen, if you can move out a Cantor and bring in somebody else that might improve this team in one area, then maybe I'll listen to it. But I am not considering, you know, those five guys for anybody, you know, for the Capellas or for the whomever. We're just here like the Steven Adams, like all those. It's just like, no, that's just nonsensical.
Right.
So we're agreeing a lot tonight, John. A lot of agreement here.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah.
It's, I don't know. It's, well, Chuck, it's not like last year.
Right.
no, it's, we're, we have a tendency to agree on things now, which it is bizarre. It's bizarre to me. And, you know, I wonder what's happened to you.
I was waiting for this.
Yeah.
Well, when the team's 8-1 or whatever it is,
I guess.
You know, we'd be nitpicking things to argue about.
I think fatherhood has generally just taken your will to fight away from you, that you have now just found out that it's just so much easier to give in to the will of your children that you're just like, yeah, I'm done. Whatever you want. Yeah, that's good. We agree.
There is no bigger grind, no harder grind than parenting, because that you got 18 years of wearing down, right? And it's not just one. I got two. So, yes, yeah. There's some truth to that. I agree with you yet again.
I'm going to get you to give me money before this is over. All right. The podcast is over, actually. So thanks to all of you listeners. If you're a new listener, please subscribe wherever podcasts exist. All of you regular listeners, give us that 5-star rating and a good written review. And share the podcast. Tell everybody to listen to the Locked On Celtics podcast here on the Locked On Podcast Network.